Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, people, we're right back. And just in case you don't know the date, it is February the 20th in the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, 2021. The only name under the heaven which man can be saved. I was just talking to old Sam. Sam's off at the Walmart up there in Salt Lake City. He's at the Walmart. He wanted to call in from Walmart, but I said, I don't know if we can get that many more people on the line. He said he's been, never mind, I won't tell you what he said. Don't get us all kicked off the radio. But anyway, Tom was talking before he went to the break, and so we'll go right. But once he, I tell you what, I almost forgot. We want to go to Dave, and I want Dave to give us the price, how people can order these different products. And it'd go from like, say for instance, you just want to order one book. Say you want to order, The Greatest Story Never Told. Or if you just want to order Hellstorm, the book. Or if you want to order an audio book. Or if you want to order two of them or three of them. Go ahead, Dave, and tell them all these different packages, how they can get these products and the price and the best way to get it, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, yeah. I just wanted to say before I do that on the break, listening to that news, it's really so hard to hear the two words put together, the words president and Biden. It just doesn't sound right. And I know a lot of people feel that way. But you don't hear it. Well, I don't hear it very often because I don't watch the Jews media. And anytime I see that old corrupt creature online, I quickly move away from the page. So I just wanted to make that comment. It was odd hearing those two words put together. But if they go to Money Tree Publishing, of course, and they click on the shop tab, they can see what we have there, the products that are there. But we're talking about Hellstorm here. So if they go to the Hellstorm tab and they click on more, so they can find out more, then you'll see an image of, well, you would see it before anyway. You'll see an image of the book. You'll see an image of a cell phone with headphones around it. And that is the audiobook, and it says audiobook on it. And you'll see an image of the movie, the DVD. And so to the right of that, there's that clip that you played. There's also a drop-down menu which says choose an option. And it goes alphabetically: audio book, book only imperfect, book autographed, book inscribed, and DVD. And book only imperfect means, and I'm reading right here, it says these few remaining copies are not up to snuff and have bent or slightly crushed corners, but still look great. None of the books have any damage to their interiors. They're just not perfect, is all. And for that reason, they are imperfect. So you could get a perfect book, because we really only send out perfect books because we kind of are particular about that. Somebody's going to pay the money for it. In this case, it's $25 for the book. We want to make sure it's perfect. And, of course, the imperfect book would be $20, so it's $5 less. The audio book is $30. And the reason the audio book is more expensive than the book is simply because of the amount of time that went into producing it. It's an incredible amount of work. Tom had mentioned it earlier. I have actually, tried my hand at it as well, and it's just very difficult and painstaking work. And besides the fact that Paul English is doing it, and he has a golden voice and one of the best narrators really in the world. So for $30, $5 more than the book, having somebody read you the book is fantastic. And then, of course, there's the DVD, which is $20. And you can also get an autographed copy of the book, which is $35, or an inscribed version of the book, which means that Tom will write in the book, obviously within reason, whatever the customer would like. And that is $55 because the book has to go, you know, it has to be mailed to Tom. Tom has to inscribe it. Then it has to be mailed out, so there's extra steps involved. If you get the book and, for example, the audio book, 25 and 30 is 55, you'll save $5 by getting that combination. So instead of 55, it would be 50. Of course, the audiobook is delivered directly to you via email. It's not a physical product. So you would need an internet connection in order to get that. And if you got the book, let's say, and the DVD, it's the same thing. You would save $5. So instead of 25 and 20 is 45, it would be 40. And if you got what I refer to as the triple play, if you get the book, the audiobook, and the DVD, you save $10. So those are the combinations that you can take advantage of and learn about. The most important thing, of course, is learning about this piece of history, which the Jews media and Jewish-created and controlled Hollywood the powers who should not be, and besides the Jews media and Jewish-created and controlled Hollywood, there's big tech, which doesn't allow information, as we're all painfully finding out, to get out there. You've got the politicians who are all bought and paid for by primarily Jews and Jewish groups. Anybody else in a position of power, make sure that this information cannot get out. And what Tom was saying before about me and the company, Money Tree Publishing, it was very nice of him to say that. And I wanted to add that what motivates me primarily, I think, is that, well, I'm an American, and I don't want anybody telling me what I can say, what I can write, what I can think, and what I can do, as long as it's not hurting anybody. So as soon as somebody tries to tell me what I can do and what I can say, then that's it. I go into battle mode. So what gets me going is when people like Tom, who's just really just a sweetheart of a guy, as is Paul, both of them, neither of them have any ego at all, which is great. When people push around people like them, that really gets me going. So as long as there are jerks, bullies in the world who try to silence points of view, well, we're going to be there to put that material out.
You know, that said, Dave, the whole time you were talking, I was wondering, it's going to get tougher for people like you, people like Blood River. Have you had any threats? Have you had any barriers thrown in your way? Have you had to fight any of these, the Chosenites? Have you run any difficulty yet getting your material out? You know, and do you think it's going to get worse since we had that man that you mentioned who's supposed to be sitting in the White House right now? What about that, Dave?
Yeah, that's something pretty interesting for me, and I don't quite know why it is, but I have not had any issues. So, I mean, I guess I might think or I might believe that I should have had these kind of issues, maybe, because of what I've been doing for quite a bit of time, but for some reason, and I don't know why that is, but for some reason I haven't. And I don't know if it's going to happen, if, you know, the day is going to come when it does. But at this point, no. The only thing, there's only been two things that have ever happened, and that's in regards to, as you said, the Chosenites. And that was one, when I interviewed someone and talked about her work that exposed Israel and Jews and their bias in the media. And I was interviewing her for American Free Press, and I agreed with what she was saying because it was true. And the Anti-Defamation League wrote an article on their website attacking this lady, and they mentioned me, that I had interviewed her. So that was the only thing that has ever happened. And the only other thing that you could consider an attack is that in August of 2019, we were using PayPal as the payment processor, and PayPal dropped us out of the blue for no reason. We never did anything. We never had any chargebacks, or because we conduct. Oh, on the way back.
Hey, Tony, if you hear that, there's the music. We'll be right back, Dave. People, hold on. Just in case you tuned in, we have Dave Gehary, owner of Money Tree Publishing. We have Tom Goodrich, the writer of Hellstorm, and we have Paul English calling in from England. Be right back.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Dear Blood River Radio family, God help me, I love that music, I really do. Little Matt picked that music out. You've heard me say that a million times. We've got Dave Gehary on with Money Free Publishing, Tom Goodrich, and Paul English. And now we're getting ready to go right back to Dave. He's going to finish up where he was topic before he went to the break. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, thanks, Eddie. Yeah, so the only other thing they've done is that they took away our PayPal, which prevented us from, functioning. And so that was kind of a shock to the system. And they did that, and we got back on our feet, of course. But no, I haven't had any threats. Prior to all this, I was sued by the New York Stock Exchange, and I actually beat them, and it was a free speech case. So I'm not afraid of this stuff, obviously, and I welcome, you know, whatever it is that they want to do. I'm an American, as I said, and I'm going to do what I want. So, you know, they could say whatever they want or think whatever they want, but it's not going to impact me. But I wanted to say that here with Hellstorm, and one of the most wonderful parts of it is this is the audiobook, which, as I said, takes hours upon hours upon hours to produce and get out there. And here it's many, many hours long. If you go to the website, Money Tree Publishing, you'll see that it's 429 megabytes. It's 14 hours long. So it's a 14-hour audiobook. Folks who maybe can't read because of their eyesight, and there are people out there like that, unfortunately, sadly, or people who like to listen to these type of things while they're driving, this is really what you want to get. And I wanted to, if we could play a sample clip of Paul English reading that and then go to Paul and let Paul explain a little bit about, you know, that whole process.
Please do. Please do.
On the night of October the 20th, 1944, the village of Nemersdorf lay mantled in sleep. Dark and still, only the twinkling of street lamps suggested life in the tiny town. It was now the sixth autumn of the war. The once mighty German nation teetered at the brink. Her cities lay in ruins, her industry had been shattered, her economy was on the verge of collapse, and worse, the Allied armies of the world were locking a death grip on the very borders of the Reich itself. No one with eyes to see or mind to think could doubt that utter defeat was not only certain, but imminent. And yet, the village of Nemersdorf slept. For 6 years now, the Third Reich had been mortally engaged in the most violent and cataclysmic war the world had ever known. Millions of Germans were already dead. Millions more were crippled or maimed, and many others who had survived intact were staggering towards starvation. And yet, Nemersdorf slept. The children of the village lay snug, warm, and seemingly secure beside their mothers as they always had, and as they imagined they always would. In the bedrooms below, grandfathers, now the only men remaining, coughed quietly in the night, then rose from time to time as they always had for a cup of water, a glass of schnapps, or perhaps a quiet moment's draw on the pipe. Just beyond, in the barns that adjoined most homes, milk cows rustled softly among the hay and fodder. In the dark village square, the old town clock patiently tolled the passing hours as it had night after night, year after year, century after century. Outwardly, at least, and despite a world engulfed in smoke and flame, nights in Nemersdorf passed peacefully, predictably, as they always had. But that was about to change. All was about to be violently swept away forever. The war, like a wall of angry red lava, was rushing down on the sleeping hamlet, and was only moments from arrival.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, that's yeah. Hi. Welcoming me back. It's been great listening to Dave and Tom this past half hour and stuff, and yourself, Eddie. Yeah, that's from the beginning of the book.
Thanks.
It is the start of the book, and 14 hours later, you will get to the end of the book if you listen all the way through. I know that when I was recording it, the idea actually, I mean, I couldn't personally, I don't think, listen to something, you know, in one big long stretch. I don't know. I mean, over in the States, of course, you have these immense roads that are very, very long. So as Dave was saying, you know, people that are driving, maybe, I don't know, maybe you have 14-hour drives or 2 7-hour stints or whatever, but reading it was very interesting in the sense that I'd obviously read it like a normal person back in 2014, i.e., you know, silently looking at the pages, doing that kind of thing. When you read it out loud, and this would go for anything, but it obviously goes for this book as well, there's you end up becoming a bit of an actor, really. I didn't think about that at first, but you do. I think you have to be, to some degree. You are, hello, I'm the narrator, you know. I mean, that's that kind of thing. So I found that by the time I'd done it, my diction was really good. It sharpens you up considerably. I became extremely precise about everything. And all my pauses and stutters disappeared. I was just sort of on the mark all the time. And so I have it down as a mental note. I actually am continuing to record other things in the background on a regular basis just to keep my tongue and my mind sharp around words. And so the whole I can't remember. I think it took about and this is, I don't know whether this is typical for other people. I don't really know. I don't know what the industry of audiobook readers is like, to be quite honest. I just did it. But I think it's about, for every hour that's recorded, it's about 3 to 4 hours of actual work. And the reason is that after you've recorded it, you have to go back and listen to it through. And then you find that there's bits that aren't quite right. And then there are certain sounds in the background that you didn't think you were picking up that you find that you do. So you have to edit them out. I mean, some people don't, but I do. And then I had this big, and this might sound a bit tedious, but there's a big debate about whether you let your breathing sounds occur in the narration or not. And I'm torn a bit, really. I mean, the lazy part of me says, yeah, let's leave them in. And but of course, if you're breathing and panting all over the microphone, it can be a little bit off-putting for the listener. It breaks the mood. It breaks the mood, you know. You go, why is he out of breath so much? And you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I learned breathing techniques as well. So I guess these are things maybe that actors do, you know. And there are obviously, although it's not as common today, there are people that train people to sing. There are people that are voice coaches. And the more of it I read, the more I realized that these skills were probably, you know, I even considered it. I thought, well, maybe I'll go someplace. But in the end, you just sort of hammer through it and get it done. Tom has created, obviously put together, this extremely intense book. For me, it is the most intense book I've read in terms of a thing that cuts you to the quick. That was my experience back in 2014 when I read it. And it would be my experience again if I read it through again. Because wrapped in the book are these personal anecdotal tales. And when I read it the first time to myself 7 years ago, and I mentioned this to Tom when I spoke to him afterwards, and I've probably mentioned it elsewhere, is I read it in the summer of 2014. You remember that? You remember that? That was a COVID-free world, and people, although we were grinding our teeth down with frustration about certain things, we hadn't yet fully realized what a lunatic asylum we were about to be plunged into. Anyway, we'll get out of that. But I remember whilst I was reading it that I would be overcome by reading it, and I had to stop. I used to go into the garden. We actually have one here where I am, and I would go and pad around the garden for a bit and breathe in and out and try and just get my equilibrium back, because there are things in there that are so appalling, so bad, that, you know, it's difficult to countenance them the first time that you come into contact with them. It's really disgusting, you know, it just is. You gain an insight into the sheer terror of the whole thing. So how was I supposed to read it? You can't read it with lots of emotion all the time. It just struck me as being a bit silly. So that's the reason why it's done in a kind of metered fashion, or at least I chose that approach with it anyway.
Paul, we have to go to a quick break. I'm going to come right back to you. Don't lose that thought. I want to go right back to what you were talking about as soon as this break's over. Be right back. People, we got Paul.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Texas officials are critical of the snowstorm crisis that's going on in the South. Here's the state's agricultural commissioner, Sid Miller, on Fox.
There's no excuse, you know. Us Republicans, we run Texas. It's on our shoulders. We messed up. I'll just admit it.
Most of the state now has the electricity restored, but the big problem now is no water. The extended freeze has ruptured pipelines, and those who do have water are ordered to boil it.
We've got repairs to make. We've got weatherization issues. We've got to make sure that people have food and water.
That's Texas Congresswoman Sylvia Garcia speaking to reporters as she helps out at a food bank in Houston. In northern Oregon, the National Guard has been deployed after a week of snow and ice has trapped people inside with no power. This is USA Radio News.
Maybe you've heard about MediShare and you know what it is. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance. But you've wondered, can I really save a significant amount of money on my monthly health care bills? And the answer is an emphatic yes, you can. You could save a lot of money. Whether it's just for you or for an entire family, MediShare has an option for you. In fact, the typical family saves $500 a month switching to MediShare. And it really is the gold standard when it comes to healthcare sharing. You get free telehealth services. You get a huge network of doctors. You get great customer support. And you get the sense of security that comes from being a part of 400,000 people who share not just each other's medical bills, but purpose, too. MediShare is a community of Christians who pull together and pray for each other, which is very refreshing right now. If you want more info, it's so simple. You can get a price within 2 minutes. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Federal agents have charged 9 so-called oath keepers with conspiracy, accusing them of spending months planning an attack on the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to halt the certification of President Biden's election win. The Justice Department leveled charges at 6 more oath members of the Oath Keepers. They charged 3 others earlier in the investigation. Prosecutors said the 9 defendants worked together for months before the January 6 attack to coordinate plans, including shared transportation to Washington, D.C., and gathering before in the lobby of a Virginia hotel. Some of the members also allegedly discussed keeping a cache of weaponry outside the city. Authorities have arrested and charged more than 200 people for their roles in the January 6 attack, which left 5 people dead, including Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick. Also, 2 other police officers who were at the Capitol during the attack died of suicide in the days following. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Right back. Well, people were right back. Mike temporarily went dead. I have just another little problem, but it was overcome. My headset went totally dead there for a minute. That's why I had to do that kind of double take. But we were listening to Paul English before we went to the break. We're going to go right back to him. Paul, I want you to continue, but I'd like to make a comment or two and ask you a few questions. For instance, I've loved having you on the program before. I think it's been about a year ago we have you on, and I think we talked about this, but we have a lot of new listeners coming on that haven't heard the things we're going to talk about. Judea, international Judea, declared war on Nazi Germany, on Germany way before the shooting war started. This was about 1932, 1933. It was full headlines. You can go back, you can research it, you can see where international Jewry did a full boycott on Germany. Also, with that in mind, that war was probably, and you correct me when we come back, you can correct me when I'm wrong, the war was planned, the shooting war, years and years ahead. We have a fellow in the United States who was in the FDR, Franklin Roosevelt's administration. I can never think of his name, but I think he was the one that wrote a book that said that Germany must perish. He said that all Germany must be destroyed. German citizens must be destroyed. They must kill every one of them, man, woman, and child. Would you like to comment on that, Paul?
Well, I think, all these, I don't think that event in that sense is any different to many other key historical events over the past 500 years. So what are the key historical events I'm thinking of? The English Civil War, the French Revolution, the U.S. Civil War, the Russian Revolution, the Franco-German War. There's been a lot of stuff going on since the late 1600s, the last 340 years or so, you know. And in nearly every single case, all of those events and others, the planning of them is deep and takes place for many years prior to all the stuff coming out on top. Right now, the current situation, all this COVID garbage, it's been in the planning for a long time. They've been planning it for 3 or 4 years, probably longer than that. So it's all a plan, and they've got it all unfolded out, and they've gone through all their options, and this is what they do. And their job is made considerably easier these days by their almost total stranglehold now, once again, on the media. And that was the situation, of course, back in the late 20s, early 1930s. And it's the guy you're thinking of course, is Samuel Untermeyer, who was leader of, was it the World Jewish Congress or something? Anyway, he got a bee in his bonnet about Germany for all sorts of reasons. There's all sorts of extremely odd little facts wrapped up with him. He was involved in funding the Schofield Bible. So he's just, you know, he's all been part of the undermining class, as it were. I am the underminer. He was obviously modeled on him. And, you know, he fit that role well. They found out that many people, many Jewish firms on Wall Street were funding Hitler and doing quite well out of it. He got quite cross about that too, so he was trying to change that, but he couldn't shake them off. They do like to make a bit of money, you know. And then finally, as you were saying there, Eddie, I think it's 1932, certainly an English paper, I forgot what it is, London Gazette or London Standard or whatever it was at the time, there is the headline, World Judea declares war on Germany. And of course, if you think about, you know, what we were saying earlier as well, what's happened since 45, since the closing of that, supposedly, all of the agendas, the multi-culti racial genocide of our people agendas have gone, have been cleared. The path was cleared. I was speaking to another American colleague I've got about this, and one of the comments he passed to me at the time was, he said, you know, they had to get rid of Germany to roll out their global agenda for this global government stuff. And when you look at it, they really did. Because every single thing that they were doing in Germany is, I would suspect, from our perspective, obviously they did it in a German way. I'm not German. I'm not alive in the 1930s. None of us were. That's an era that's gone. But the blueprint, the essence of what they were doing, not all of it, of course, but most of it, we would probably heartily agree with. They were basically saying, this is our nation. We are ourselves, our own people. This is how we want to behave and live. We're going to do this. Well, you can't have that if you're a plotter for global governance. And so it was, you know, Germany was just taken out. It was set up and taken out. Unfortunately for all of us here around the microphones, our nations, I'm afraid to say, were hijacked by the same force that's currently in the same hijacking process right now and brought it about. And so the real tragedy is that you know, our forefathers back in that generation participated in actually doing in the greatest ally we would have ever had in bringing the world back to the way that we know we want it from a healthy point of view. That's what we need to, you know, I bear that in mind a lot. My father, I think I may have mentioned last time I was on, Eddie, my father joined the Royal Navy at 17 years of age in 1942, and he never talked much about it. He joined the Navy because he wanted to see the world. Many people, I suppose, went into the services with that kind of view. They did over here anyway, and he never banged on about it much. He never thought, he wasn't proud of it. You know, not that he'd done anything foul. I mean, maybe he escaped, or that he was a signalman, a head signalman on destroyers and things like this. But during the last 10 years or so of his life, I had the most wonderful conversations with him. They would be very, very long, 2-3 hours at a time on the telephone. And I presented lots of this information to him in a very calm sort of way. He didn't have a problem with any of it, really. He just said, we were had, weren't we? I said, yeah, but you weren't to know any better. Because, you know, if we go back to that period, all the people had, just like we would have had if we'd have been alive then, was newspapers and radio. That was it. There was nothing else. Oh, and the movies were getting going as well. And that was about it. And it was all in the hands of the same people. And they were hammering people's brains. And it's that old adage, you know, when a country wants to go war with another country, first it must go to war on its own citizens. And hey, look at what's happening to us right now. They go into war on us all the time with their with their propaganda and mind bombs. That's what's going on, you know.
You know, Paul, I might add too also that the war is not over. The war continues. It was 1945 was simply when they announced the war was over, but it continues to this very day. In fact, Germany has always been our leader. That is a European leader, Western leader, the best inventors, the best composers, the best artists, the best minds, period, have always been Germans. Sure, there's been a lot of great thinkers and writers and poets in other countries, but Germany, yes, everybody looks to Germany, or they did look to Germany. And, of course, taking out Germany was priority number one. But the war continues, yes. In fact, Dresden, it's not over yet. The bombs continue to fall, like you guys have mentioned that. Yes, every dark invader that enters Germany, we're talking millions, that's another bomb dropped on Germany. Not Dresden firebombs, but bombs nevertheless for all of Germans. And we mentioned Kaufman, Theodor Kaufman, who wrote Germany Must Perish. Yeah, it's a terrible book, a terrible, violent, vicious book. But does anybody know that Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Secretary of War, or excuse me, Secretary of Treasury, Henry Morgenthau, a Jew, actually had a proposal that was accepted by FDR and everybody around him? It wasn't codified, it wasn't put in print, but it was understood. That is basically that every German must die. And he was talking literally, die. In fact, there was a plan for sterilization after the war, plans to starve Germans to death. Those who didn't starve would be sterilized. And that was pretty seriously contemplated. In fact, it actually did occur for a while until the Soviet Union became a threat from the east, and they needed Germany as a fort to stop the movement of the Red Army east if they ever made that move. But in fact, we're talking Dresden and the deliberate, malicious, concerted effort to kill every man, woman, and child in that city, which was virtually accomplished, quite honestly. But the book Hellstorm is full of other such terrible atrocities like that massacre. At the same time, Dresden was being destroyed, burned down completely. A similar massacre was occurring on the Baltic Sea as men, women, and children, generally old men, women, and children, were trying to escape the Red Army by the sea, by ships and boats, to get away from them, because they were rapists, they were murderers, they were killing everybody in sight. Well, guess what? The American Air Force, the British Air Force, they were attacking these refugee ships on the frozen waters of the Baltic Sea, blowing them up, attacking them, and sinking them. Sometimes thousands of people were drowning in this. There were, one boat example. The one boat was a pretty good example. The Wilhelm Gustloff. And there were 7,000 to 9,000, mostly women and children, drowned when the Soviet submarines sank them. And so this is going on all across Germany, this attempt to kill every man, woman, and child. But just because the surrender came, so-called peace, in 1945, the war simply did not end. Not at all. In fact, the new book I wrote, Summer 1945, points all of this out very clearly, that the war went on, continued. In fact, what Germany was still suffering in the summer of 1945, Japan was still going through its war. One was
Tom,
peace, one
go
was
to
war.
A quick break.
Okay.
Hey, Tom, we got to go to a quick break. As soon as we come back, I definitely want you to take up where you left off. People, hold on. We'll be right back and take one more quick break.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, "If those people," referring to the dictatorial federal government, "if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home." As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church, a congregation of God's covenant people. Informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these this means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, people, we're right back, folks. You're listening to Blood River Radio. My name is Eddie Bombardier Biller, in case you're just tuning in. And we're going to go right back to Tom Goodrich. He's given us some of the gorier details that actually happened of the book. He'd done extensive research, publishing what happened in Dresden, Germany, which that was the true Holocaust in World War II. It wasn't the so-called 6 million in perishing the Holocaust. No, sir, that was not it. We go right back to you. Go back to you, Tom. Continue where you started. I know you mentioned. Go ahead.
Well, I'm probably getting carried away a little bit, but I want to add also, just because we're talking about Dresden, and I happen to mention the Baltic Sea Massacre, where tens of thousands of mostly women and children and old men were drowned, basically, by the Soviet submarines and American aircraft and British aircraft. But also the massacres going on in the east on the land, the Russians, the Red Army coming through, virtually raping every woman they encountered. Now, there were some women, I'm sure. I don't know of any myself personally. I didn't research and find anybody. But virtually every woman, and we're talking not just talking women of age, we're talking about kids as young as 10, 9, 8, raped by these soldiers because they're told to do it for the most part. But some of them are doing it because they want to, simply want to. But they had orders from on high that every woman belongs to you. You own her, do what you want with her, and when you're through with her, you kill her. Now, that's a deliberate attempt not only to rape and satisfy your filthy, sadistic sexual desires, but to also kill the people over there when you're through with them. This is going on all over. In fact, I didn't have enough information when I wrote Hellstorm, but I did have enough information when I wrote Summer 1945 of American rape on the Western Front. And what I found, it was very embarrassing. First, let me say, I had two fathers. I had a biological father who was an island-hopping Marine on the islands against Japan. And I had an adoptive father who was in the American Air Force and fought in Europe, of course. But I didn't have the information when I was writing Hellstorm, but I did for Summer 1945. The Americans were raping on a very similar scale as the Russians were. And prior to this, we had always thought it was just the Russians, basically, being turned loose like savage beasts on the women of Germany. But no, the Americans, too. In fact, they were encouraged by their officers. And that's a very terrible thing for me to admit to myself, because I'll admit that there was a time when I was very proud of this country. I love this country. And then now, as obviously you can tell, not so much, because I'm ashamed of so many things that happened in our country. Paul, you or Dave got something else to add to this massacre picture that's going on in Germany at this time?
Well, not much more, Tom, in the sense that I suppose I could just, you know, say more and more of these incidents and everything. But the ones you've cited, of course, are huge, colossal, and illustrate, I think, the whole wave of the intensity. I mean, you know, prior to reading the book, everybody said, well, it's warfare and anything goes. And I suppose, you know, no one knows quite how they're going to respond under fire and do these certain things. But the difference here, and you were just touching on it, it seems to me, is that these were instructions from on high. You've got this hellish creature in Russia, Ehrenberg, who's, you know, his leaflets to the soldiers mm-hmm. are basically inciting them to behave in the most appalling and atrocious way, and they did, unfortunately, many of them. I think one of the things that sticks out in my mind, there's one scene, I can't remember where it is, just to do with this difference, as it were, within the culture of the Russian army, that there's a village, you may recall it, Tom, there's a village, and the German troops are retreating, and they're saying to everybody in the village, you must get out. And they say, oh, no, we don't need to get out. He said, no, you must get out. Get out now. Go as quickly as you can, and the German troops go and get us. But some of them say, well, they can't be that bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the first wave of Russians arrive, and amongst them are European Russians, officers, mm-hmm. who much more forcefully tell them, you've got to get out. They go, why? Because the troops that are coming behind us, these are very, very bad men. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is one thinks of armies as being completely disciplined and all of the same culture. But Russia is, you know, those troops, the Mongolians, the ones that they brought through, and I'm not laying just the blame exclusively at their door, as it were, but they were distinctly different. Yes. And some of these incidences are just of a totally different breed of people. And this is how they behave in these hellish circumstances. And for them, traditionally, I suppose, you know, I think about really, although this is not related directly to this, but you think about some of these inhumane practices conducted by the Red Indians in America. They were all sort of jumping around, you know, smoking a peace pipe all the time. Some of this stuff is really, really rank. And even in South America, the way that they sacrificed and did people, you're sort of dealing with this incredibly visceral and violent kind of approach to stuff. Whereas the European sensibilities, yeah, we are at war, but it doesn't include civilians. And I suppose this is another telling point, not only just of the book, but of that war, which is that, you know, civilians, women and children, supposedly became a legitimate target in this. And that's what marks it out as being a real step down. And away from, that's what wrecks things in turn on a very fundamental level of where our decency meter remained. It was obliterated. I lay a lot of the blame for that on Churchill and Prof. Lindemann, his half German, half Jewish advisor, who came up with many of these strategies to literally obliterate. I mean, they targeted most of the bombing on the terrace houses because they could get more blood yield per square meter. A square yard there than they could out in the countryside where the people weren't concentrated as much. And you're thinking, why are you thinking like this? I mean, so you see that the purpose of it, of course, was the genocide of the Germans, not that other yes. group that claim it was about them. Uh-uh. No.
Hey, Paul, I'd like to make a quick comment here before we run out of time. You know, let's talk about what happened after the shooting war started, after May of 1945, in the mentioned the Eisenhower death camps. I mean, Paul, and when you talk about this, let me know what you think. I think it was an all-out genocide that was planned years ahead of time. I think that the Jews of the world want to absolutely wipe out the German people all of Germany, like you said. And now, you know, in another leap forward, we're having what I call soft genocide in Europe, in the United States, with this massive non-white immigration in here, invasion. But anyway, before I go off that, tell us a little about the Eisenhower death camps that were put up after the war. And I've heard that more people died after the war than actually died during the war. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I think, isn't that, Tom, that's really one of the big points of your book, is that more Germans died after the war than during it. How you know? That's a very simple thing, a very short sentence to say. How many people are aware, outside of this conversation, how many people are aware of that?
We have a caller,
hardly
folks.
Anybody.
Guys, we have a caller. We have a caller in. We have a quick caller. We'd like to make a comment, maybe ask a question. Guys, her name is Barbara Ann. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, real quick. You're talking about what happened after World War III. And from a woman's point of view, I studied all 139 episodes of I Dream of Jeannie. And I found that there was all this subliminal stuff going on. And then one of the shows talked about a Sokolovsky and a Wiedemeyer. I knew that Sokolovsky, S-K-Y, is probably Jewish. I looked it up, and Sokolovsky was a Russian Jew who was starting World War III. It was evident. It was totally on the course of World War III. This would be the end of it. And then Wiedemeyer, General Wiedemeyer, I guess that was the Berlin airlift. So it shows you how they openly use violent names in innocent TV shows. Another thing, I was at Missouri State University, and I had a writing coach, a young student, and I was afraid to put my work out in public, you know. And I told her so. I says, you know, it's about the war and the Holocaust. She goes, you don't have to be afraid. My great-grandmother hid my grandmother under the bed because the rapes were going out in the street. So this is kind of firsthand knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for that information.
Okay. Doing a great.
I'll go ahead back to you, Paul. Before we run out of time, would you like to make a comment on the caller, or would you like to go ahead and talk about the death camps? It's the ball is in your court.
I think he's in Tom's court, really. I'll wrap up quickly because I can see we're close to the end, aren't we? But the Eisenhower death camps is what? 2 million? 2 million dead? There's some tremendous testimony still up on YouTube, I think, from American GIs who were asked to do terrible things there and had to live with it for the rest of their lives, you know? It's out of order. The whole thing is out of order. And it shows you the complete, you know, what are we facing right now in the world? The complete reversal in public discourse of actuality. The media are continuing to literally reverse everything and fire it back at you. And you look at this and you go, oh, so this is part of it. But that process is not new. That process is definitely not new. So since 1945, we've been told that it was about trying to genocide the Jews. No, it wasn't. It absolutely was not. It was about trying to genocide the Germans. And unfortunately, you know, because they were carrying the torch in many ways, family life, all of these things that we naturally respond to that are good, that they were embodying, that was the reason why they were detested so much by the globalists. These people are creatures that want to block out the light. That's what they want to do. And Germany was burning bright at the time. Not perfect. But, you know, I would have chosen it from just about anywhere else in the world at the time. And I think many other people would if they really understood what was taking place there. And you only have to see those happy crowds, don't you? So it's, you know, we live in a world where much of the stories, nearly all of them, are reversed in public discourse. And our job here, your job, Eddie, and everybody's who knows this stuff, is to reverse it back. We've got to have an extremely feisty attitude with these people. I'm sick of them. I'm sick of the whole thing.
Amen to that.
And so we're in a fight. We're in a war, and it's a word war. Let's keep it like that. We can win it. You know, we can win this. I know people don't think we can. We're going to win it.
Well, you know, Paul, our motto here at Blood River Radio is that we have already hoisted the black flag. We're giving him the black flag. There's no quarter asked, none given. Tom, before we run out completely out of time, we got a minute or so. Would you like to close out?
Well, I'd like to say this, Eddie. You've done a great job of applauding the three of us. Dave is the editor, the publisher of a great organization that's getting these books and tapes out. Paul is doing lots of things other than just narrating a book. He does many other things with radio and media. And, of course, I do the best I can writing. But I want to thank you for just providing us with a stage to come on and talk. Thank you so much, Eddie, and thank you to Blood River and all your advertisers.
Thank you so much. I would like to have you guys back on within the next month or so, if you would be willing to come back on, because there's so many things we need to talk about that we couldn't touch. Well, good night, everybody. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, dear Blood River Radio audience. We love you. That's why we do this. Believe it or not, we do love you. And hang on, same time, same place next week. That'll be the 27th. And don't forget, whatever you do, tune in. If you have to hear one show, you want to tune in to March the 6th. It's going to continue on something like this. Good night, everybody.